This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 263. Our first of our three draft previews. This is Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and the guy I lean on when it comes to draft content. Seth, we begin our draft show. This is actually going to happen, it sounds like. The draft, despite the fact that everyone will be in their own house, and it's happening, apparently.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're talking about fantasy football come to life. We'll all be GMs in this draft for the first time ever. We'll all be in our own war room, so to speak. We'll all have the opportunity to have our big boards up and Skype and Zoom and whatever else we want to do, you know, stream our picks, and the NFL will do the same. And I mean, obviously we're in unprecedented times for our country, but and the world, I mean, but in the same ideal, this is the strangest draft season I can ever remember.
Yeah, it's unreal to think, and I'll be honest, there's a lot of people, I know there's a lot of executives, that front office guys, that don't want this to happen. But the fact of the matter is, if you can have it, and they're being within, they're doing things within the guidelines for health and safety, why the heck not? I mean, it's a dog and pony show, it's over the top every year. Tens of thousands of fans attend the event. We watch it on TV, but the truth of the matter is, it's something you can do. It's something you can simply do the way we're doing it. It's just going to be interesting to see how it happens, or how the coverage is going to work for things like the look. For me, I'm more interested about how teams are going to handle the media part. You know, the last several years of covering the team, I've been at the team facilities. I think since 2015, I've covered the draft at the team facility all 3 days of the draft, the Thursday night, Friday night, and all Saturday. And there's a bunch of reporters in the room. We're got NFL Network on in the background. We've got Twitter. We're writing stuff. We're waiting for the Cardinals to pick. And then at the end, you know, after the Cardinals make their selection, we start writing about it. Then there's a conference call with the player. Hey, you know, you get to get that first reaction. I'm sure that's going to still be the case, but how the logistics are going to work for me. I mean, that's the part that I'm interested in, how they're going to handle that. If they're just going to have standby by Zoom, because obviously the Cardinals have been using Zoom with the media to contact us. Cliff Kingsbury spoke Tuesday. Jordan Phillips spoke on Monday. Jordan Hicks spoke last week. I'm interested in that part. And the part that came out that's really interesting is that apparently the league is going to run kind of a mock draft to make sure it all works. I wonder if teams will actually try to make their real pick and see if anybody leaks any of that information to the media, or someone finds out, or if they're just going to pretend, okay, they're just doing the act of communication for the transfer of information before they make the announcement. Because this is going to be fun and interesting, especially if there ends up being any snafus, because that'll be, as long as it doesn't involve the Cardinals, I'm very, very open to the idea of some snafus and problems and distractions. It'd be fantastic if, as long as it's not the Cardinals, because that obviously, I mean, it'd be fun to cover, but it would be bad for the team that we both really like.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of those situations where you're looking at it and you just assume Dave Gettleman will forget to unmute himself, or the screen's going to freeze and he's going to be talking in the background and letting everybody know what his draft plans are for the whole draft. So that's what I'm looking forward to, because I think that's where we're headed. But I mean, this is, like you said, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot different than anything we've ever seen before. So, you know, the questions are going to be how these guys fit and how they get things taken care of. And we have no idea. And so it's just, I mean, we're all going to be along for the ride at this point, and we'll kind of see what happens and where this goes.
Well, for our show tonight, guys, listeners, as always, thanks for listening as we do in our episode 263. This is our first draft preview show. We are focusing on the offensive side of the ball. We're going to talk about the Cardinals first and foremost, their offensive needs in terms of the draft. We'll throw around the idea of what about trading back? Should the Cardinals even consider it? And then we're going to go position by position, but we're not going to go traditional quarterback, running back, receiver. We're kind of go by tier of, I don't know, need, how mock draft says. We'll start with the offensive needs. We'll talk about the offensive line first, then receiver, then running back, then tight end and quarterback. I know the Cardinals don't need a quarterback, but it's always good. You know, aside from the Cardinals-centric part of what we do, we still want to talk about the players in the draft, and we'll be focusing on some of the prospects at the top, whether or not the Cardinals would be interested or whether they would fit, and then some of the other players that we might fit that might fit in day two and day three, some names to be familiar with. If you've read Revenge of the Birds or you've read Cards Wire, you know some of the names as we've run across mock drafts, either early rounds, late rounds. I run simulations almost every single week trying to play out different scenarios and who might be around. But let's go ahead and get started with that, Seth, talking about the Cardinals' offensive needs. In this draft, you know, obviously the one thing that I think we can comfortably say is they probably will not address the quarterback position. They have their franchise guy in Kyler Murray. They have their backup in Brett Hundley. And then they've got two young guys behind them. You know, you've got Drew Anderson, a guy they liked last year, and then they brought in Chris Streveler from the Canadian League. So would it be comfortable to say that the quarterback position is really going to be kind of takes a backseat completely for the Cardinals? I honestly would be shocked if they drafted a quarterback. Could you see it happening?
I mean, the only way I could see it is if a guy like Jalen Hurts somehow was available in round four. I mean, that's it. Like, I don't see any other reason. People might say, well, why would you take that? Well, because, I mean, Hurts is, you know, got some similar skills to Kyler Murray, and Hundley's only on a one-year deal. So, you know, and he'll be a year away from being the guy that you're like, hey, if God forbid Kyler goes down, you're comfortable giving the reins to him. But I mean, that's like the only scenario I could see. And there's talk of Hurts going in round one. So, I mean, that's not going to happen. But like, if you're saying, you know, could you see them bring in a quarterback in the draft, not after the draft, because they absolutely will bring in one or two unrestricted, you know, or undrafted free agents. It would only be if a guy like Hurts somehow fell to round four to them.
The other positions we look at, and if I have to look at what the positions that are left, you've got receiver, offensive line, tight end, and running back, that in terms of priority, you would have to say offensive line during the draft has to be the highest priority, probably, with receiver being the secondary. And maybe that's simply because they have, one, they drafted three receivers a year ago and they got DeAndre Hopkins, and it's a deep receiver class this year. And then running back and tight end would be right. Running back to me feels like, yeah, they probably would like to address it, but not critical. And tight end is low. If a guy they like falls, that kind of how I feel about the positions that are left. That offensive line is definitely going to be something addressed, because if we've noticed something over the last few years, the Cardinals always address the offensive line, and it's almost always on day three. But it always gets addressed. Wide receiver, there's still enough uncertainty with the young guys that they have to warrant. And the scheme says, hey, load up on receivers. While running back, because of the situation they're in now, yeah, you can draft one, but you're not going to force it. And then tight end is a case of, well, if there's somebody you like, then go get them, because it seems like tight end is a position of luxury, kind of in with what the Cardinals do.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, this is a unique tight end class where there's a big kind of market for the H-back that they utilize in their offense. You know, so you could get a number of players that have, one, played the H-back role already, and two, get a number of players that fit what you want to do. So I think in that sense, you know, tight end could be a day three need, barring somebody again falling, you know, that we'll discuss on the podcast. But for the most part, I think for me, I'm not afraid to kind of lump offensive line and running back together, because to me they're in the same boat. You have proven capable starters, obviously, and you know, Justin Murray proved that he was capable of being a starter for an entire season. Marcus Gilbert has been a starter his entire career. So at the right tackle position, it's not like you're saying, wow, we have this glaring need or hole. But in the same breath, you have nobody after them for next year. So if you say take a tackle at eight, it's not a guarantee that they'll start. And with the uncertainty of the offseason, I would wager that it would be more likely that Murray and or Gilbert will be the starter come game one than any rookie drafted, simply because we don't know if they're even going to get a full training camp, let alone they're likely not to get the rookie offseason, you know, kind of crash course that they get in May and June. And so to me, those guys kind of go 1A and 1B in the sense of that you need them, but they're not immediate needs. They're not 2020 needs. So you kind of lump them together. Now, that being said, the value at eight is much higher for the offensive line than the value at eight for running back. So it would make sense that you kind of put offensive line higher in that case. Whereas, you know, your lone day two pick at 72 would probably be a more priority to the running back if you were just to go on that. So I think you're absolutely right in your kind of needs. I would throw, the wide receiver position in there still in the idea of, like, you still need another kind of proven outside guy that can be, allow Cliff to do the full thing you want. I know you have Hakeem Butler here, but I mean, that's a fourth round pick that didn't play a snap last year. You know, it could be one of those situations where it is one of those situations. You can't count on Hakeem Butler. Anything you get from Hakeem Butler's solid, but you can't count on him and not draft a talent because you're like, oh, well, we have Hakeem Butler. So, but you know, offensively, I think it is offensive line, running back. And then, you know, in the same way, you can rank tight end, wide receiver kind of similarly.
Now, there's some talk. Now, the Cardinals don't have a second round pick this year right now because of the trade for DeAndre Hopkins. So they've got round one, round three. But then they've got 2/4, a sixth, and a seventh. They don't have any draft picks in the second and the fifth. And now there is some chatter that perhaps what the Cardinals ought to do is trade back in the first round. Potentially to try and get a second round pick or to get a third and a fifth or another third. The deal is with that. The trouble with that is if you really want the Cardinals to have a second round pick, the length that they're going to have to drop, the distance they're going to have to drop is going to see a pretty big drop in talent or in surety in terms of the type of player you get. I ran a scenario. I tried to make it reasonable where Tampa Bay, who have the 14th pick, traded up to number 8. So 6 spots, targeting a tackle. In this case, it was the simulation had them pick Tristan Wirfs. They had their choice of tackles, and they really wanted a tackle to protect Tom Brady. For the Cardinals to get a second round pick back, it was to give them their first and their seventh to then pick up to move down to the 14th and pick up a second round pick.
And Jess and I would happily cheer for that scenario of giving up a seventh round pick. You don't even have to get anything back.
Right, right. In this particular mock draft, it worked out kind of well because one of the 4 premium tackles was still available at the 14th pick. But depending on how things play out, you better get one of those guys that you really like, or the trade-off is a less sure thing in the first round, and then in turn getting a pretty good bet in the second round because there's some talent, especially on the offensive end, because the running back class and the receiver class is going to have some nice talent there at the kind of the top of the second round, or the top to the middle of the second round, because there's talent at those positions, either because the position is devalued, like at running back, or there's just a lot of really good receivers. So in that scenario, but if it's not to get a second round pick, how willing are you to trade down to pick up a third or a third and a fifth?
You know, it just depends on where you're talking. I think my limit would be, you know, you're sitting at 8. I think my limit would be to go to 12. I believe that's the Raiders pick. Is that correct? Yeah. So you're not going to, I find it hard to believe that they'd be willing to trade down to 13 with 49ers. And quite frankly, to me, if you trade down, you want to control the draft and make sure that you're picking a guy potentially that the 49ers may want. I have, you know, kind of a guy I know that works in and around the 49ers, and he's whispered strongly that one of those – 2 first round picks is going to be an offensive tackle because they have no idea what's going on with Joe Staley. Apparently it's still a coin flip on whether he comes back. So they're wanting to make sure that they have insurance with one of the guys. So, you know, if you trade back to 13 and you allow San Francisco to come up and say, take a Mekhi Becton or a Jedrick Wills or one of those kind of top 4 tackles, especially if all 4 are on the board. I mean, most people would say, well, that'll be fine because then one of those 4 tackles is there. Okay, but do you really want to allow the 49ers to pick the best tackle, even if they're paying you, you know, like you said, a third and a fifth, or I don't even know if they have a second. I don't know what the 49ers have from draft capital.
They don't have a second, third, or fourth round pick.
Right. So, I mean,
they'd have to, like, for them to move up,
they'd have
to give up their first or like a next year first. And I don't, I mean, as nice as that is, if you're trying to fill holes now, if you're trying to fill your roster now with talent, a next year's first isn't nearly as appealing, especially for when you kick up a first round pick from a team that was just in the Super Bowl.
Right. That's probably going to be at, yeah, in that 21 to 31 range again. So, yeah, so that's, I mean, that's my thing is I think 12's the floor to go back for three. I mean, I think 15's the floor to move back at all, because I do think that there will be 10 players sitting at eight that they probably have clustered together that we'll kind of talk about over the next 3 weeks that will allow them to move back. But it's not a, you know, it's anytime you move back, you always run the risk of Calvin Johnson or Calvin Pace and Bryant Johnson. And that's what
not
you
getting T sizzle.
Right. And that's kind of what you want to avoid more than anything is you want to avoid losing out on a premium player for two nice NFL players. So that's would be my kind of thing.
So I'm not, you know, since I think picking up a second round pick is going to be virtually impossible. Now, I could see a scenario where a team like the Browns at 10 or the Jets at 11, if they're dead set on one of the particular tackles, for example, if let's say the Browns have their eye on Mekhi Becton, who, if you're matching up talent with scheme, probably the perfect match. And they don't want to risk the Jets jumping up or someone like that. That could be a player they move up for. But, you know, move up two spots, it's probably not going to net you a whole bunch. But even still, you're still in position to pick up a player that you like. Or the Jets might do the same type of thing. Denver kind of would be kind of the sweet spot. Especially if you don't mind taking a receiver, because there's still really some really good receiver talent. Denver, it'll be interesting because I don't think the Raiders probably feel. I think I've read somewhere where they don't really they're not looking to trade up. But obviously, everything this time of year is hard to believe. If they can trade back, okay. But especially, you know, we'll talk about this next week. If they're really looking hard at a player that we wish that they wouldn't take at the eighth pick, but it would make much more sense to take at the 12th, 13th pick, go for it. Because then you're still picking the player that they were going to get anyway and picking that extra pick after that. Other than that, I think the one thing that you risk with trading back is to miss out on one of the more sure things than to pick up a less sure thing and with not necessarily a higher ceiling. That's the only thing that I, you know,
well, and,
this year
and
with the talent that there is at the top of the draft, there's guys that I like. And then there's after that young guys like I'm okay with, and I'd rather them pick up a guy that I feel is like a sure thing.
Well, and I think you nailed kind of an important thing, which is there's still a team that needs premium talent. Their premium talent outside of Kyler Murray and now, you know, DeAndre Hopkins are all at or on the wrong side of 30. And then, you know, maybe, you know, you have a Buda Baker who's close to that. But, I mean, he's a free agent next offseason. So, and he's going to command, you know, we've seen safeties, they're going for about, you know, 10 to 13 million. So that's a decision they're going to have to make next year. So, you know, again, you're still lacking high end talent. So you want to make sure that you have the chance to draft the highest end talent as opposed to, like you said, just accruing picks. You know, teams like the Seahawks were able to trade back and kind of accrue picks because they had so much high-end talent on the defense.
And they were already in the late first round anyway, so late first right. round to early second round, what's the drop-off?
Right. Well, and that's why you're able to do that. It's because you have high-end talent, so you're consistently winning. And then you're taking guys or you're drafting multiple guys that are going to have time to sit and learn your system. Whereas, you know, the Cardinals, I would say from this offseason, they're in a really nice spot in the sense that they don't need anything desperately. I think that's the first time we can say that in three off seasons, maybe actually probably four. If you even go back to 2016, you can say that now that's not to say they're a good team or they're, you know, a Super Bowl contending team. They have plenty of things they can upgrade, but that's a very different conversation than glaring needs or weaknesses. But again, they also have the need for elite talent. And ideally at eight, you should get an elite talent.
Cardinal XO, the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to start with the actual preview. We're going to talk offensive line. We're going to talk the names, players, talent for the top of the draft is offensive line. It definitely will be under consideration. And then some names to know later on in the draft. That's coming up next, Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we're going to talk offensive line. The Cardinals, this is what the mock drafts say. The mock drafts are saying at number eight, the Cardinals are going with an offensive lineman. And I've seen basically every one of the four premium linemen. There's four tackles at the top of the draft that are considered the premium talent. So you've got Andrew Thomas from Georgia. You've got Mekhi Becton from Louisville. You've got Jedrick Wills from Alabama. And you've got Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. All four of those guys viably could be a selection for the Cardinals in the first round at number eight. Now, let's kind of talk through some of these players, what we like, what we don't like, what are their strengths and weaknesses. If you're kind of, at least from my point of view, as you look at some of these players, Andrew Thomas, he's the boring name. He was the one that was seen as the top tackle for a long, long, long time. He's steady. He's played right tackle and left tackle. He was a freshman All-American at right tackle. Moved to left tackle for the following 2 years, and he's pretty steady. Probably not the flashiest. You've got the big guy. You got Mekhi Becton. He is ginormous. Measured in at 364 pounds at the combine, ran the 40 and 5.1. He's really going to play more at about 350. Then you've got Tristan Wirfs, the athletic freak, played mostly right tackle, but bounced between right and left tackle in his time with the Hawkeyes. And, you know, he's big. He can run block. He comes from a program who's their head coach, was an offensive line coach, Coach Ferentz there. And then you've got Jedrick Wills, who've played exclusively right tackle for Alabama, and a technician, super smart. They say he doesn't make the same mistake twice. Now, Seth, if you're looking at these four players, which of the four has the highest ceiling, do you think?
I would think Wirfs has the highest ceiling. Of all of them, he'd be a guy that you look at as a, you know, fringe all pro from the beginning. You know, you and I have talked quite a bit about Wirfs in terms of ceiling and scout. You text me today and said you really liked the idea or comparison of Brandon Scherff to Tristan Wirfs. Now, Scherff moved from tackle to guard when he was drafted in the top five. by the Washington Redskins, and now he's, you know, a Pro Bowl guard in Washington, was just franchise tag, making a lot of money there. And so that's a really good and apt comparison. And somebody, you know, and I text you back and I said, that's funny, because somebody had just actually said that to me. And then, you know, they put a caveat on there that that Wirf's ceiling to them is Quentin Nelson, which is, you know, the best guard in the NFL.
Which is funny, since, you know, he's never played guard. That's the thing. He's never played guard. He's Daniel Jeremiah. You know, he said that he thinks he would be an all-pro guard, like an elite guard, and he thinks he'll be a pretty good tackle. It is this way. And the background between him and Scherf is really, and I don't know what, you know, the Cardinals at number eight, they don't really need a guard. Like, but if you have a guy who can play tackle well, and then potentially if they liked him more as a guard, J.R. Sweeze is going to be a free agent. You slide him over a spot, and then you could have yourself a really, really solid interior line between Pugh and Mason Cole and Wirfs. Now, as a tackle, what do you think he can be ceiling-wise as a tackle?
I think one of the high-end comps that we've talked about for Wirfs would be Trent Williams. So from an athletic standpoint, they have, you know, a similar athletic profile. Williams played all over the line at Oklahoma. So it's one of the same, you know, similar situations. I think Williams was a bit more consistent coming out of Oklahoma. But he's a guy that has, you know, been a huge, huge success in the NFL and been, you know, kind of a mainstay as one of the best left tackles in the NFL. Obviously that would be everything goes right, high end kind of comparison. our low end comparison that we came up with, and just so people know, when I'm talking about R, it's Justin Higdon and I. We sit there and go through these numbers and kind of our grading, and offensive line is a little more difficult because there's not statistics that you can compare to, but we base things on starts, positions played, things of that nature, when we come up with these comparisons, and then we fold in, you know, our mixture of athletic profile and testing. So a lot of these are Justin and my kind of brainchild that we work on, and you know, any of those people that have listened to Josh and I podcast for a long time, they know that we believe in the high end, low end comparison, because most people just give you a comparison and then leave it, and they say, hey, this guy compares to, you know, Quentin Nelson, and then you leave it, and then you draft this guy and he's really good, maybe a fringe one time Pro Bowler, but he's not a two time All Pro and the best player at his position the first 2 years he's in the league, and you're like, well, I didn't get a Quentin Nelson. So that's one of the reasons we've always used the spectrum, because we try to, you know, give you a spectrum of outcomes, and a low end outcome for Wirfs was a guy like John Stinchcomb, who actually was very successful in the NFL. So again, you know, when we look at it, you're looking at a low end of a guy that was, I believe, a one-time Pro Bowler for New Orleans, won a Super Bowl with New Orleans, played right tackle in New Orleans for 5 years, was a, you know, a day two draft pick, out of, you know, went big college out of Georgia, really solid career, but when you look at it and you talk about Trent Williams, who's lauded as, you know, one of the greatest linemen in the last decade, versus a John Stinchcomb, who just was a, you know, 6-year NFL starter on a Super Bowl winning team. And then, you know, people go, well, that's not as good, but it's still a very solid pick. And so what the spectrum hopefully does is gives you the idea of, hey, this guy looks like, and you hate saying this, but a guy that won't bust. He's got the traits, the games played to be a guy that will be a player that has success in the league. It just may not be the grand success that you would hope with the 8th pick in the draft.
Right. The one thing for me with the Cardinals, in terms of overall, he was my favorite lineman for a while. The one thing that's let me slip on him a little bit is this. If I had to look at his ceiling, I think it's probably Lane Johnson, which is really good, by the way, because he's a fantastic right tackle. But Lane Johnson never panned out really as the solid left tackle. And Worf's played less left tackle than Johnson did in college. And so it's happened a little bit less. Now, and mostly in the top 10, when players are drafted, when tackles are taken, they have had significant time playing left tackle or are projected to play left tackle or kind of in that state. That's happening a little less now as I've gone through some of the last few seasons. That said, if I had my pick of a lineman, it I take in the top 10. So it looks like he's probably going to be a pretty good right tackle at minimum, to a really good right tackle, and maybe could fill in and you know, he could play left tackle, but you're probably not going to look at to him as your long-term starter. I'm okay with that, unless, you know, with that pick, as much as the right tackle position is more important, I'd rather have a guy who could project as a guy who could take over for DJ Humphreys in 2 years if he kind of flames out, or 3 years when he gets too pricey, and you'd rather play the younger guy and have him play through his rookie contract and then to his first big contract.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. You know, it's one of those situations where you just look at how you're going to find where those guys play. So, you know, we talked about Wirfs, another guy that's gotten a lot of talk, and I think a guy that's become kind of the proverbial favorite, if you will, would be Jedrick Wills out of Alabama. Wills actually compares really nicely to Lane Johnson coming out. Now, Wills is an interesting case because he played right tackle solely at Alabama. However,
and was a right tackle in high school.
And, yes, but however, he played for Alabama that had a left-handed quarterback. Now, he didn't switch sides when Tua got hurt and they went to whoever the guy was after Tua. Don't ask me. I don't care who it was. But you look at it, and he did protect the blind side. Now, again, Jess just explained it. There's zero chance that DJ Humphreys, barring injury, is not your left tackle next year. So when you look at Wills, that's, you know, that's a really nice high end comp would be Lane Johnson, a guy that is an all pro, you know, a guy that is one of the better offensive tackles in the league. when you look at a low end type for him, you see talent, you see a guy that has been successful and will likely be successful in the NFL. And I talked about this the other day. He was a first round pick for the 49ers, Anthony Davis. I think Davis went to Rutgers. I'm not 100% certain, but you know, he was a very good tackle, in the NFL, right tackle, but never lived up to the hype and then kind of retired. So let's put the weird retirement on its own thing. From a playing perspective, you're talking about a long-term starter at the right tackle position on Super Bowl contending teams. That's a high-end pick, but was never a Pro Bowler, never an All-Pro, nothing like that. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's not a knock, but again, we're talking about a worst-case scenario, a long-term NFL starter. You could do much, much worse in that sense.
As we look at the other guys, these are truer left tackle players. Andrew Thomas, Mekhi Becton. Becton is super intriguing to me because of the size and the footwork, former basketball player. But he can play right tackle, left tackle, and he could probably be successful at both. The one thing with Becton, the guy out of Louisville, he feels to me he's the size, kind of the size of Leonard Davis, and Cardinals fans will remember him. To me, he's got, in terms of a floor, Levi Brown, a dang good run blocker, and probably, had he stayed at right tackle, probably could have had a reasonably successful NFL career. Now, he was a 5-year starter. He entered basically a sixth season as a starter at left tackle, and he was always the whipping boy for Cardinals fans. But once he got hurt and you went with someone else, you could see why he was playing left tackle. Becton has the potential, but you have the potential to kind of, he put it himself, you run behind him, you might score a touchdown. However, there is some concern about how he will do in passing sets, because he didn't do a lot of true passing sets at Louisville. And so he might be the biggest boom or bust player of that group, but he's super intriguing because if you plug him at a right tackle right now, you'd think that he's probably, as a run blocker, might be better than the two right tackles the Cardinals have now. And, if he's, and with the high end, with a little bit of technique, he will be a guy that you'd love to have on your offensive line.
Yeah, and he's got some nasty to him. He's a guy that brings a physicality that most teams don't have anymore. You talked about big Leonard Davis. The only problem with the Leonard comparison to me is actually that it's a little too high end for Mekhi. I mean, he was never the player the Cardinals hoped he was, but he was a 3-time Pro Bowler when he moved to right guard in Dallas and was, a success in Dallas. A guy that was, right after Leonard at the same college was Mike Williams out of Texas. He was a top 5 pick. Same type of size, 6'6", 370. And he was a 5-year starter in the NFL. I think that's, to me, a more apt low-end comparison with a high-end comparison of a Trent Brown, a guy that's, kind of a really talented multiple-year starter that's made Pro Bowls, And he fits the same size profile. It's an odd profile because you just don't get guys that are this big. So it's hard to find comparisons for these guys. But I think Trent Brown to Mike Williams, again, you're still talking about a 5-year starter. The difference is one was, a Pro Bowler who's one of the highest paid tackles in the NFL. The other one was a guy that was drafted top 5 that, dealt with injuries later because of his size, but was a solid starter for the time he was there. Thomas is the kind of boring one. I think he's a guy that is easy to project. I would say he's safe if you buy into those words. And so I don't know where he's going to fall in this pecking order. But, you know, he's a guy that is kind of like DeBrickashaw Ferguson was out of Virginia. Ferguson went top five, I believe it was, to the New York Jets. And again, really solid career. The question becomes is, you know, is he more than a Pro Bowler? Ferguson was a three-time Pro Bowler, started 160 games at left tackle for the New York Jets. So, I mean, that's a, if people take that as a slight, I don't know what to tell you, because that's a really apt and fair high-end comparison for a guy. Low end's a little harder on him. Maybe a guy like Juwan James. Again, that people might say, well, that's not low end. He was just a really, you know, he was just paid really well. But again, you're talking about a guy that has been okay in the NFL, hasn't ever been an all-pro, Pro Bowl player. You know, yeah, he's started for six seasons, but you know, he's never been a guy that lived up to the hype quite yet. So I think and that's what I would say Thomas is. He's a safe, kind of boring guy where you're talking about a really small scale difference between your high end and low end. So your floor's really high, but your ceiling might not be the highest, where you're talking about a consistent all pro type of player, but you're talking about a guy that can make some Pro Bowls that is going to start for, you know, 8 to 10 years at the position.
For me, he became, and maybe it's my nature of you know, because the Cardinals' history with first round offensive linemen is not good, and this is dating back to all their years in Arizona. He became, For a couple of reasons, I think I talked myself into making him my number one for the Cardinals for a couple of reasons. One, because he is the safe. So you feel like that he's going to be fine in the NFL. But as I look at that number eight pick in terms of value, and maybe it's too old to think, but I still want to get a guy who has left tackle potential. Like, you would feel comfortable with him being your left tackle, the projecting out. And I think probably of the four draft pick, of those four tackle prospects, Andrew Thomas is the most comfortable guy the guy I feel the most confident will be a successful left tackle in the NFL. He was an All-American freshman. He was a freshman All-American at right tackle. So I think he gives you the certainty that you plug in him at right tackle, he's going to be fine. And then, even if he's more than fine, he develops into a fine, not just like it's okay fine, but like a fine, very good right tackle. You also know that he could you could trust him to be your left tackle of the future 2-3 years from now after DJ, or if DJ Humphreys manages to fall back on the injury luck. I think I like him the best overall, even though, you know, people tell me that he's not really high on the Cardinals list. I like him the most with the potential on both sides of the line.
Yeah. And I think, you know, these are all really solid guys. I'll run through a couple more just at the tackle position, so we can kind of get moving on this. Josh Jones is my favorite prospect. I think he's going to be the best one of the group. He's from Houston. The Cardinals have a lot of interest in him, but I think he's kind of the trade down type. His high end projects as like a Teron Armstead. Low end projection would be like a Eugene Monroe, old school left tackle that played for the Jacksonville Jaguars for a long time. But again, you're talking about projections from all pro to a solid long-term left tackle type player. I'm not sure if Jones played right tackle, but athletically and physically wise, I think he'd be fine doing it. Ezra Cleveland is a guy that's got some run lately. Cardinals have had a visit or whatever you want to call it with him. Another talented guy that I think could, you know, if they were to trade down, he'd be a guy that they could look at and kind of target if they were to go offensive line in that vicinity. he actually projects out pretty nicely in the NFL as well. So you're talking about, you know, six guys potentially that could be on the cusp of being fits along the offensive line in the first round. Then there's this
Austin Jackson also fits that profile as well. And these are guys that obviously if the Cardinals had a second round pick, they would be probably potentially on the radar if they fell a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Cleveland, you know, is a guy that fits well, and you know, like you said, if they had a second round pick, they'd be probably guys that we'd be discussing a little more. From the tackle position, you know, it's one of those you just look at it. There's not a ton of guys on day three, and that's, you know, where the Cardinals fall to after this is they're not going to pick again until day three. So, or round three, excuse me, I'm struggling with that, round three. And so you look at it from that perspective, you know, maybe they're not that many, you know, talent wise. Trey Adams is an interesting one out of, Washington, and he would actually probably project a little higher if he didn't get hurt all the time. Isaiah Wilson is another guy to watch. 6'7", 340. I've seen mocks where he's in the first round. I've seen mocks where he's in the fourth round. I can't get a beat on what teams and the league really thinks of him. So that's a, you know, that's a name to watch on at pick 72, if that's, you know, where they want to go. Prince Tega-Wanagu is another guy that, again, if you're talking about day, you know, pick 72, that could fit. And then, and finally, the kid out of UConn, Peart, thank you. He's another guy that I really like. I like the kid out of, TCU, but I think he's going to be in that second round range. Lucas Niang, I believe the name is. He's a nice player, but he's had some injury history, so that's an interesting one. and so those are guys on days one and two. Day three, just like a couple names to keep in the back of your mind, just in case, you know, they fall or anything. Jack Driscoll is an interesting one out of Auburn. He's a pure right tackle. Played a lot of right tackle at Auburn. You know, he's familiar with the run scheme, so to speak, of what Cliff Kingsbury likes to do offensively. Ben Bartsch, he could be a guy at 72 you look at too. He's a really talented small school guy. I can't remember where he's out of though, but I know it's a smaller school. St. John's. So, you know, that's kind of Bartsch. Those are guys I struggle with because, you know, when you're talking about St. John's, I don't know if the NFL is going to be comfortable taking him in the second round. In the third round, but these guys tend to fly off the board, especially when they're as athletic as Bart showed to be. So those are, you know, those are just some names to watch.
I know there's a guy that you kind of like at the end, John Runyon, son of, you know, former NFL Pro Bowler Ron John Runyon. he's a guy that could be had on D3 with some upside. But again, the Cardinals almost always take some day three guys, and you know, Corey Cunningham was super athletic. If you get an idea for what the Cardinals look to for developmental offensive linemen, they're athletic. They have some mean to them, as we look at Lamont Gilliard and Joshua Miles, and Cole Toner and Will Holden and Corey Cunningham. Those are names you probably, if we look at guys, Charlie Heck out of North Carolina might pop up. Guys of those, Terrence Seal, Texas Tech guy that Cliff Kingsbury obviously is familiar with, fits the profile of guys that they would take a stab at in the late rounds. If not that those picks really matter, because they burn through them about one every year, it feels like.
Yeah. And then you go to the interior. This is, Wirfs would, I think, be the best guard prospect. If he was a guard prospect, this interior offensive line class is actually really light in terms of high end talent. Obviously Wirfs is the only name you'll mention as potentially interior, in the first round. At 72, if they're looking for, a guy that plays center, but has also played some guard, is Tyler Biadasz out of Wisconsin. I'm big on Wisconsin guys. I think they're always solid. I can't remember his first name, but Cushenberry out of LSU. Lloyd Cushenberry. So he's a really talented guy. He's a guy that projects as a center or guard. And again, we're talking about with their third round pick. You're looking at guys that will have the ability to start, maybe not this year, but in the near future. Jonah Jackson is an interior lineman out of Ohio State. Justin likes him quite a bit. Shane Lemieux is a guy I've liked, but I think he's a day three guy, lacks athleticism, but kind of the J.R. Sweezy type. The name to kind of know, I'll be interested to see where he goes, Natane Moody out of Fresno State. He's a guard. He's kind of the highest end potential guy here. And then Cesar Ruiz. I'm really interested in Ruiz and where he plays in the NFL, because I think he could project to an all-pro type, almost like a Marquise Pouncey. He's really, really talented. He's a nice player that I like a lot. I don't think he's going to be a guy that is around at 72, because I think he's going to be too much of a high-end player.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals to talk on the web. We're going to move on to the receiver prospects. Obviously, there's going to be three names at the top. Who are the other names to look at as if they move down and then later on in the draft? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Time to talk receivers. There are three top receivers there at the top: CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs. Those names have definitely cooled in terms of buzz around the Cardinals. Obviously, the one that has the biggest connection to the Cardinals is CeeDee Lamb, Oklahoma. Okay, we've got these three top guys. They're a little bit different. If they go receiver, which way should the Cardinals go? If you pay attention to my son on Twitter, he is the biggest CeeDee Lamb stan there is on the internet, I think. I can understand where he's coming from. He is my favorite, especially at pick 8. I think he has the best ceiling, and I think he would be a great fit on the Cardinals.
Yeah, I still think Lamb's in play. Obviously, it'll depend on how the first 7 picks fall, but he's a guy that fits what they want to do. He'd be a nice counterpart, and he is one of the most intriguing prospects with the ball in his hands that I can remember. That's why the comparisons to DeAndre Hopkins were so apt, because he's not this freak athlete. He's not Tyreek Hill, where he's going to run past and through everybody, but instead he's a guy that somehow just makes people consistently miss. His low end projection, I know this isn't something you want to hear at number eight. But again, you're talking low end. Was Stevie Breston, so, you know, old school Cardinal guy that everybody remembers, that, you know, had some really good 800 to 1,000 yard seasons. So, again, when you're looking at projections, you're talking about all pro to, you know, long-term NFL starter. That's not a bad thing. Judy, for me, is a guy that when you talk about players and you don't say something that they're used to, they assume that you don't like a player. And that's not true at all with Judy. I really think Jerry Judy is an outstanding talent and is going to be a fantastic player in the NFL. I also think that he is a guy that is going to work a lot out of the slot. He already did at Alabama. And so I'm not sure if that's the guy that the Cardinals need in that sense. So Judy's a really, you know, like I said, talented player. He deserves to be a top 20 pick.
Doesn't he give you a vibe of kind of Calvin Ridley?
You know, his comparisons are, his high end comparison is actually Adam Thielen. So, you know, do with that what you will. That's a, you know, people will say, well, that's not fair. But I mean, Adam Thielen's a Pro Bowler. He's a guy that's had, you know, a great NFL career. Has, you know, two seasons over 1,200 yards, another season over 900 yards. Very talented wide receiver, super athletic guy coming out. But, you know, he was an undrafted free agent out of a small school. So it's a lot different. So when you hear that, people go, well, that's, you know, that's an insult to Jerry Jeudy. And it's really not. It's a really high compliment to compare a player, to a consistent Pro Bowl level player. Low end for him would be a guy like Lavernius Coles. Sorry, old school guy out of Florida State. Again, you're talking about a guy that had good to very good NFL career. Made one Pro Bowl, had over three 1,000 yard seasons, but it was just never like the guy when he was with the Jets. But really talented player that could, you know, put up a lot of stats. Then there's Henry Ruggs. Ruggs is a tough case because of his size. You know, he's everybody knows he can fly. That's why a lot of people like the Tyreek Hill comparison. But again, we're talking about, if you're talking about Tyreek Hill as your high end, you have to go back to your low end and you know, maybe a guy like Santana Moss might be too high end.
I'll throw the name out there. It's not a name people like. Ted Ginn. There's a lot of similarities in terms of size, speed, big play production in college, playing at big time. Ginn went number 9 overall. He was a bigger threat in the return game, but I see a lot of similarities. And while he might be the best positional fit for the Cardinals, I just don't know if I want that at 8 for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, like Ginn's a really nice one, long-term NFL starter. Moss is, you know, another one, that Santana Moss that I was just talking about. One Pro Bowl, 3 seasons over 1,000 yards, 3 more seasons over, you know, 800 yards. Consistent in his career. Just, you know, like you said, not a guy that you're like, hey, that was a great pick at number 8. So that's, you know, that's where the problem comes in at. Then you kind of go to that next tier guys. So those are the 3 that you would talk about kind of with the 8th pick. Maybe even in a trade down scenario, those are really the only guys. Then you have this big gap. And so we're going to skip a lot of talented guys. So I don't want anybody to think that we're overlooking them. But there's going to be this gap unless the Cardinals trade back for a second, and then you're talking about a 3-hour podcast, and I don't know if anyone wants to listen to that. So We'll skip over guys like Brandon Ayuk. We'll skip over guys like Laviska Shenault. We'll skip over guys like T. Higgins. You know, these really talented guys are going to go between pick 8 and 72. Denzel Mims is another one. I'm trying to name them all. Jalen Reagor. So nobody thinks
T.
that
Higgins,
we're over.
Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson. Thank you. That was the name that was escaping me. Even KJ Hamler. So those are all guys that are going to go probably in between the Cardinals' two picks. So then you're going to come back around and you're going to get the next set. And that's kind of where we'll look at 72. So, you know, if they don't take a guy at 8, which is probably unlikely, but, you know, I wouldn't dismiss it completely at this point. Then they'll come back at 72 or potentially on day 3 of the draft. So we'll go from there. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a name I want to get out there early because I think Peoples-Jones is going to break out in the NFL. I think he's going to have a phenomenal career. I'm not talking about a guy that's going to be, you know, a multi-time All-Pro, but I think he's going to outplay what he did in college, and people are going to be like, oh yeah, that's why he was the number one prospect in the country coming out. He played with an abomination of quarterback play at Michigan under Harbaugh, and so that made it, you know, kind of difficult to gauge him. Michael Pittman Jr. is another one. I'm interested to see if he makes it to 72. He's a really talented guy. You know, kind of that big physical outside presence that the Cardinals may need still. And then the final guy when you're talking about at 72 that I'm going to keep an eye on is Devin DuVernay, who is Kyler Murray's cousin. Is that right?
Kyler Murray's cousin shares an agent with Kyler and Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, and so he's a super, super talented guy. Put up just insane stats this year.
106 catches, 1386 receiving yards. The guy, he ran a 4.39, I think, at the combine. I think he would be kind of like the Andy Isabella from a big program.
Yeah, and so, you know, that you look at them, and he's a guy that, just to keep in mind, in case they don't take a guy, you know, at 8, which it's leaning that they won't. Oh, a guy I forgot to mention, but I don't think he's going to be there at 72, is Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame. People will talk about him because I think he ran a 4.00 at 6.42.
And what is 6.4? Yeah.
229, so massive guy, really, really talented. So those, you know, I mean, that's the hard part, is that the wide receiver class is really talented and deep, but you already got the best receiver in the draft in DeAndre Hopkins with your number 40 pick. So I think that was a fair play. Just real quick, run through some names and feel free to throw any in as we go through here. Lynn Bowden Jr. is a name that could interest the Cardinals on day 3. He might be a fit. Van Jefferson was a guy that really stood out at the Senior Bowl. Sorry, All-Star event was escaping me for a second. So Van Jefferson stood out at the Senior Bowl. He's an interesting guy. Antoine Gandy Golden is another name to know. He's a guy from Liberty, 6'4", 220, ran like a 4.5. He's a bigger, more productive Keyshawn Johnson type. So, you know, if they're looking for a true Z, that's a, you know, name to know. That, you know, for me, that really rounds it out. KJ Hill's another guy, but, I mean, he might be a guy that factors in at 72, but I think he's going to be more of a slot guy. And I'm trying to stay away from these slot guys because the Cardinals have more than enough of those already.
Definitely. They definitely do. All right, coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about running backs. That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. Back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Obviously, they're not gonna draft a running back at number 8, and they don't have a second round pick as of right now. So we've got players like George's DeAndre Swift. You've got Jonathan Taylor, my favorite running back in the draft, especially if the production he had at Wisconsin, the size, the speed at the combine, everything screams star to me. He's not going to be around for them unless they somehow trade back it to the top of the second round. You got J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, kind of do-it-all guy. Those are players who aren't going to be around. So there's you're going to hit a second tier of running backs by the time the Cardinals hit in the third round. Who are some of those players that could be around? And I mentioned those three players. Do you think like a Clyde Edwards-Helaire that he's going to slip beyond the second round because he's another guy? Not the speed, but he kind of has the do-it-all type skills. Who are the running backs that starting in round 3 are names that are worth looking at?
Yeah, I think Edwards-Helaire is a guy to know. I mean, he's a smaller guy, 5'8", 200, but he's stocky, 210. Great pass catcher. James White is a good comparison for him coming out. Really just active, talented runner. Kind of your guy that can do a little bit of everything for you consistently. Cam Akers out of Florida State's a guy to know. He was in a similar situation to Donovan Peoples-Jones at Michigan. Akers was at Florida State. I mean, he literally was the offense at Florida State. And this season he put up over 1,100 yards rushing and 14 touchdowns. Can receive the ball out of the backfield. So he's a nice, you know, fit.
He's a bit of a gem because a lot of guys wonder how in the world he produced with the, you know, this is a Florida State program. It was kind of a garbage team last year, and being the only weapon they had, he still put up big numbers.
Yeah, and he's an interesting guy from a profile perspective because he doesn't really have a profile because of his size and speed. He runs kind of like Marshawn Lynch, but he's a really nice receiver out of the backfield as well. So, you know, that's a guy to kind of know and understand that maybe if he's there, he might be a fit. I know a lot of people are high on Zach Moss out of Utah. Man, that's a lot of carries, a lot of wear and tear there. I don't mind Moss at all. I think at 72, you know, it's a little rich for my blood, but I would understand it from that perspective. I think those are the three guys at 72 that you can talk about. And then you kind of go from there. You've got, you know, your mishmash of guys. I'm not going to go through too many, but I want to give you two guys. We mentioned DeAndre Swift going way before the Cardinals pick, right? I know you said Taylor and Dobbins, but I just want to make sure we mentioned DeAndre Swift. He'll be one of those that's not available as well. So one guy to keep an eye on that I think really could fit what the Cardinals do on day 3, it's going to be probably a fifth or sixth round type of guy. Because of his injury history, and that's Anthony McFarland out of Maryland. He's on the Devontae Freeman spectrum in terms of size, athleticism, and production profile. Freeman would obviously be a high-end comp. The reason his name has stuck with me is because his low-end comp is a DeAndre Washington, who Cliff Kingsbury got a ton of success with out of at Texas Tech. So, you know, that always sparks interest in kind of notes in my head. And then another guy to keep in mind, and there's a ton of guys in this draft that are interesting, but the final guy was Antonio Gibson. He's a guy that was used mainly as a receiver for Memphis and then got some kind of short yardage and gadget play runs. He only had 33 carries, but he had 369 yards, over 11 yards per carry. And then you have that he had 38 receptions for 735 yards. You know,
did he have like 14 touchdowns and 77 touches?
Yeah, and he's, I mean, you kind of talk about what David Johnson was as a rookie type thing. I don't think he's going to be that productive or talented, but he has the same skill set that David had. I've seen Ty Montgomery comparisons. I think that's a more fair and apt comparison, you know, similar to what to Ty Montgomery coming out. So those are the two kind of day three guys that I would just keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah. Then, and Gibson is a player that's super intriguing. You know, you think physical trait comps, David Johnson, Kenyon Drake kind of falls in there. I think he's got David Johnson build with kind of Kenyon Drake speed, right? He's that kind of size, and considering what the Cardinals like to do offensively, and Anthony McFarland reminds me a bit of, at a slightly bigger school, but kind of like a Chase Edmonds, the production that he had when he was at Fordham. Granted, McFarland did it a slightly, you know, Fordham's tiny, and Maryland has a program, not a big program, but it is a program there.
Yeah, and so, you know, those are both good comparisons. Gibson kind of profiled as like a Ronnie Brown type. Obviously, Brown was a more high-end prospect. But, you know, Ronnie Brown to maybe like a Jeremy Langford out of Michigan State a couple of years ago. I can't remember who he played for, but I think he was a pretty early pick that just never made it. I think he was with the Bears, in fact, that just never made it and never, you know, kind of – came and that would be a fair kind of comparison, if you would, for Gibson, because you're talking about a guy that just, you know, you don't know where the outcomes lie because the athleticism and everything. Yeah. Jeremy Langford was with the Bears and then for a short stint with the Falcons and could never average over 4 yards per carry. But I mean, when you talk about size, speed, everything. Langford, 6 foot, 2'11", ran a 4.4 40 coming out. He's just, you know, he had all the size and measurables that you wanted, just didn't ever put it all together.
Cut on X on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk a little bit more tight ends this time. That's kind of next on Rise Up C-Red. Back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Tight ends. It's an intriguing position because there isn't really good talent at the top. And it's, as we see year to year, there's some really specific role-based talent at the position. So it kind of depends on your cup of tea in terms of what you need as a team. But in terms of the overall... We're not going to see a tight end drafted the first round, are we, this year?
No, I mean, the only, I would say, top 50 player at the position is Cole Kmet out of Notre Dame, who's kind of a tight end factory at this point, right? Like, that's what they do.
I mean, they gave us Troy Nicholas.
Right. He was the only not good one to come out of there. So, you know, that's what happens when you're a Cardinals fan. But, I mean, there are a ton of intriguing kind of fits at 72. I don't know, honestly, like, tight ends, like Jess said, tight ends are so tough because unless you are a freak of nature or you put up insane numbers, it's, you don't see a ton of guys that are hyped up as high end picks. So just a couple kind of names to know for 72. One would be Hunter Bryant out of Washington. I think he's a guy that could potentially be a guy that if they were to take a player at 72, he's one. He's kind of that athletic kind of move tight end. That's probably, and then the other one was Bryce Hopkins out of Purdue. Again, you're talking about another athletic kind of do it all tight end. I think those are the only two I could see even being entertained in the third round. Outside of that, you're just talking about a couple of guys on day three that have really piqued my interest and made me kind of go, huh, maybe they could be fits in Arizona. The first one is a guy out of Dayton, Adam Trotman. I think he's 6'6", 250. So he's a guy to kind of know. Again, we're talking about day three. So we're going deep for you guys here. He was 6'5", 255. He only ran a 4.8 40, but his short area speed was really, really insane. So he could be, a similar type of player and a backup to Max Williams, who has struggled with injury in his career. Another guy that kind of really caught my eye as I was going through this was Jared Pinkney out of Vanderbilt. So, again, you're talking about trying to figure out where these guys fit in and everything. Another guy that didn't test well, and that's where you get concerned, but he did block well, kind of in that Rhett Ellison mold, a guy that had a really, nice long niche career, but he was not, didn't test as well as you would like. So I think he'd be a late pick, but he is a guy that might be able to fit as that H-back move, kind of lead fullback type that the Cardinals may name. I'm not even going to pretend to try to pronounce Albert O's name, the kid from Missouri. So 6'5", 258, ran a sub 4.5 40 at the combine, and then hung it up. Didn't do anything else, because when you are in the 97th percentile testing wise for your position, you're a freak and you don't really need to do anything else. But my favorite stat on Albert, and again, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, so I'll learn it if I have to. He put up in his career 23 touchdowns on 98 receptions. So, I mean, that's a staggering statistic to me, that one out of every four times he caught the ball, he scored a touchdown. That's just insane to me. I think he'd be kind of the prototype fourth, fifth round tight end that gets picked up and ends up having a really nice career. He's kind of my favorite day three prospect thus far, that I've found, because that stat just blows my mind. I mean, a 23% touchdown rate is literally unheard of. I mean, nobody scores once every four times they touch the ball. Nobody.
All right. So I don't have anything to say about the tight ends. there's I mean there's some guys out there. I mean, there's some names, obviously. LSU, they had Steven Sullivan and Thaddeus Moss. Thaddeus Moss is a smaller guy with obviously he's the famous one, is he's Randy Moss's kid. But yeah, there's a kid out of Oregon. What's the name of that kid? That Breland, right? Jacob Breland?
Yeah, Jacob Breland. He's not bad. Moss is an interesting one. I like Moss, but he's 6'2" and 250 pounds. And he has really, really short arms. So it's just, it's hard to gauge. He didn't test at all. I know he's athletic. I mean, I've seen him play. And when you're 6'2 and 250 and you put up over 500 yards receiving in the SEC, that's good. But for the most part, I would, it's not a guy I would venture to guess on what he'll be in the NFL, because I just don't think we have a complete enough profile.
Coming next on the last part of the Rise Up T-Red podcast, we're going to come back and talk quarterbacks. That's coming next on Rise Up T-Red. We're back on the Rise Up T-Red podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the Web. Obviously, this isn't very Cardinal-centric. We're talking quarterbacks. There's going to be it's going to be interesting to how the quarterbacks fall. We know Joe Burrow. We know Tua Tagovailoa. And we presume Justin Herbert will all probably be taken in the top 10 of the draft. If you had your pick of the three, who do you think is the most likely to be a franchise guy? After what I saw from Burrow last year, it's hard to think that he's not going to be successful. I don't, maybe he doesn't quite have enough humility to him, but it's not Josh Rosen-like, because you saw what he did. He elevated his teammates, but the astronomical jump to his performance from 2018 to 2019 is just otherworldly. And, it's hard to think. He looks like he's a sure thing with the skill set that he's got.
Yeah, and you always hate to use that word "sure thing," but you look at Burrow, and again, when you talk about that outcome based and comparison based, you like his range of outcomes of what he possibly or potentially could be at the position. I think he's the surest, safest thing. I talked with some people that I really trust and kind of got their gauge on Burrow. And so to tie this back into the Cardinals, this is what they said for the last three draft classes. So the three before this, so not including this one that's been panned out yet, how they would rank the quarterbacks. And, you have Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and they said the only other person in that mix would be Kyler Murray to them. So that would be one tier. And then Burrow would be on that second tier of guys that you look at and you say, hey, that's, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, those guys. They think he's obviously better than the Mitch Trubisky's and Josh Rosen's, and even they think more of him than like a Baker Mayfield. So I thought that was an interesting one. Burrow's range of outcomes is interesting, because I think he's on the safe side in that he's in the Matt Ryan, and then, low end, he's probably like an Andy Dalton at worst. So you're talking about a all pro to, maybe Pro Bowl type player. And so I don't think that's a bad range of outcomes. Tua's tough because of, size, injury history. You just don't know where to place him.
The arm talent is good. The accuracy is good. Being left-handed is interesting, because there haven't been a lot of great ones. But when the comp that I can, it's crazy. Again, this is probably a hot too hot. Drew Brees is what they comp him, even though he's a much more mobile guy than Brees. But because of the accuracy and the throwing ability is really, it's eye popping. But that durability is going to be something that's going to nag when you've got the ankles, you got the shoulder, you got the hip. But if you're sold on him, you can't pass on him.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair assessment. Brees is the, you know, like you said, the high end comparison that you get a lot of, and I think it's a fair one. I honestly don't have a low end outcome for Tua because there's just too many unknowns. I mean, you're talking about a Colt McCoy type, where maybe he hangs around, but he's never the guy he was because of injuries. Or the guy you thought he could be. Herbert's an interesting one because the range I've heard from him is Ryan Tannehill to Brock Osweiler. So
I watch a lot of Pac-12 with Arizona State. Herbert's the guy that he gives me Blaine Gabbert, Matt Barkley vibes. I wasn't overly impressed. I know he's got some great numbers. But when I've watched him, I've not been, you know, some players that now Blaine Gabbert, I don't like when he got drafted where he got drafted. I was blown away because I hadn't ever heard of him. And that I was into college football. But when his name came up at the end of this time at Missouri, I'm like, I don't know about that. I watched Brock Osweiler. There were lots of guys that were gushing about Brock Osweiler because of his arm. I watched Arizona State play. I watched every single game and snap they played. Nothing about him told me he was going to be a good pro quarterback. Matt Barkley ended up falling in the draft. I wasn't superly impressed with him. Herbert gives me, like, yeah, I'm like, Blaine Gabbert to, could he be Ryan Tannehill? Like, okay. Last year, Ryan Tannehill, I think that's what the best you're expecting, but I wouldn't count on it.
And then Jordan Love's the kind of wild card, and he's the guy that could be the trade area for the Cardinals because you have Jacksonville sitting there. They've got 96 first-round picks over the next couple of years because the Rams are idiots. And, you know, they don't have to trade up. So they can sit there, and if they like Jordan Love or if they like a Tua Tagovailoa who – you know, probably isn't going to play this year, and they've got Gardner Minshew already, you know, or the Dolphins don't want to take him at 5, but maybe they want to trade up and just take him at, you know, a little earlier. That, you know, the Cardinals could be sitting there, and Jordan Love's the wild card. You and I text about this. Everything I've heard so far, the top is going to fall as Joe Burrow, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, Isaiah Simmons, Tua, Justin Herbert, Derek Brown. And so if it falls that way for the Cardinals, you know, they have their pick of the offensive linemen, they have their pick of wide receivers, but they also have their pick of you know, you just named 7 players, and so now all of a sudden, if a team loves a guy, say, you know, like we said, say somebody loves Jordan Love, and they know that they have to get in front of Jacksonville, that could be a sweet spot. I don't know who would love a guy that much to come up, but if they do, that's the spot you may have to go, because Jacksonville's the wild card every year. You never know what they're going to do because they don't ever tip their hand. They never let it known to where they're hedging. Everybody assumes that they're going to take an offensive lineman. I've heard from people I trust that they're looking at defensive linemen. So we'll see how it kind of plays out. But, you know, the quarterback situation in this draft is not one the Cardinals have to worry about, and that's kind of nice.
Obviously, you know, you've got the Jalen Hurts out there. You've got Anthony Gordon. There's a whole bunch of names out there. And it would, you know what's great? I didn't have to worry about any of the quarterbacks at all when we were doing any draft prep because they're there. The Cardinals probably aren't like Jalen Hurts, the Oklahoma standout. You know, you've said that there's some quiet talk about there about the Chargers liking him. Is that the case? Is that what I remember you telling me?
Yeah, the Chargers allegedly like him, and so maybe they're sitting there going, hey, we can take him in round two. We don't have to worry about, you know, getting Herbert in round one. And so that's, you know, that's the thing, is that there's so much right now going on that it's too safe, if that makes sense. Like, when you're hearing consistently and you know, kind of pulling back the curtain, when you hear the same thing from so many people consistently, usually that's the biggest red flag. When you're hearing like, hey, this is the guy for this team and this is the guy, like, all of a sudden you're going, this does make sense. Like, there's no way that the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 picks are set in stone like this already. So, you know, Hurts with a couple teams, the Chargers and the Patriots, I've heard, you know, that's the back end of round one, early round two. What about a team like Indianapolis in round two that doesn't have a long-term, you know, guy on their roster, but Philip Rivers would sure be the perfect fit, you know, to groom him, right? So,
all right. And with that, let's go ahead and wrap up this show. We will be back next week to talk defensive prospects. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening to Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Go Cardinals. We'll be back again in a week. More draft stuff, this time all defense. Take it easy, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise! Rise!